All right, so Jess passed out the checklist. I'm a very tangible person. I like to be able to see exactly what's going on. I'm also a list person. If I have something to do that day, I need to make the list. I need to see it. I need to see that it's been checked off. I need to see progress. I need to know what your expectations are of me, what my expectations are of myself. So one of the things that, even with insecurity, and I just feel like the umbrella of insecurity is like huge. So even sitting down and putting something together, I felt incredibly overwhelmed. I even told a few people, it's funny that as we talk about insecurity today, I am probably at the height of insecurity in my own self, and a big part of it boils down to, can I clearly communicate insecurity? I don't think I can, so therefore I'm insecure about it. So I just wanted to we're gonna use this checklist not only as something that I want you all to look at and just kind of look for yourselves and check mark, but also it's gonna be kind of, we're gonna walk through the life of Saul. And this is the first time I've ever kind of done something like this, and then I don't have like bullet point. We're just kind of go through Saul's life as fast as we can. And the thing about it is once I started looking through here, it was like textbook, like as you go through almost every single one of these things. And so I'm gonna read through some of these really quick. And the thing about being insecure is that we don't like to look at ourselves in an honest way, either one way or the other. So at the end of class, we have a whole nother set of these, and I would encourage you guys to each take one and go to someone who you know would be very butterly honest with you. Because I feel like for me, as someone who has deeply battled insecurity, I didn't start to even, I don't even know if you'd say, work through it, heal from whatever, until I had those people in my life who were very honest with me and would point things out very specifically. I think that's very, very important for us to have. So it's also good for you to kind of look at it and see how self-aware you are to kind of compare the two. So we're going to go down through these really quick. And if you can check mark some of these, then you're a human being. So important you are. Okay, the first thing, am I jealous or possessive? Does it make me upset when others succeed? It's like a benchmark of someone who can tell is insecure. They do not like it when other people get something good. Do I have an excessive need to feel special, adored, appreciated or admired? Yes, it is a natural need that we have, but the key word there is excessive. Is it an obsessive or an excessive need to feel special all the time, or feel adored, or appreciated, admired? Do I ever exhibit rage attacks when others do not sufficiently meet my needs? Basically, does it piss me off when I don't feel like people think I'm the stuff? Am I controlling or manipulative? If you are a woman, most likely. That's what we are, controlling and manipulative. But to see that it's not just I'm control freak, but to say, I'm a control freak because I'm insecure, I want to have the control. Do I have an inflated self-esteem or grandiosity? Am I always bragging or trying to find ways to bring up my accomplishments or fishing for compliments? It could be one way or the other. You know, is it some way like, how can I insert into this, you know, this situation something that I've done? Or are you the type that's like really downplays things, hoping that someone will bring up something and give maybe a compliment? Do I refuse to believe or take compliments? Do I think someone has other motives when complimenting me? Am I dramatic? Is every problem the end of the world? Am I always sick or injured? And I'm not talking about like legitimate sicknesses or injuries. I'm not talking about I have a lot of people around me, autoimmune disease, and they're sick all the time. I'm not talking about that, but you know what I mean. The people that are always like, oh my gosh, we're playing something, and you know, we have a little girl that comes to camp every year, and under medical conditions, her mom always writes, her number one medical condition is hypochondria. She was like, do not call me for any of the other medical conditions she claims she has, because the only true medical condition she has is she's a hypochondriac. First day of camp, girl, oh my god, everyone's icing it, and then I went over and I was like, you gotta go walk, because someday you're gonna lose a leg. No one's gonna believe it. And then she was like, fuck, threw her ice off and ran out. But, you know, she's in my cabin and we got to talk about how that stems from the fact that she has you know, no dad in her life at all, and she needs to feel center of attention somehow. So she's found that through always being injured or always being sick. Do I expect others to take responsibility for making me feel better about myself? Do I continually bring up something I did wrong or justify it to myself or to others why it happened? This tends to lead to an obsession over why I was helpless or that it couldn't have been my fault. You know, it's like those crazy talks we have. Like, we start off with, like, I did something wrong. Oh my gosh, I'm so upset with myself. Then get into, like, well, but it kind of needed to happen, or this was the reason why. And then it goes into this, like, it was totally not my fault at all. Like, I had no control over that situation at all. And that leads into the next one. Do I blame others for my behaviors or feelings? If you make a statement a lot, you made me do this. You made me feel this way. And a lot of times it can be people that have absolutely no connection to us. You know, there's people that were like, that person totally makes me feel bad about myself. And that person could have, like, just walked into the room and might even, doesn't even know we're there yet. Do I have an attitude that demonstrates the world revolves around me and you need to cater to my ideas, opinions, thoughts, and feelings? I think that most of us will probably say no to this, but if you go find someone who's very honest with you, I think we'd be surprised that maybe that tendency happens a little bit more than what we'd like. Am I arrogant? And you can ask yourself, kind of answer, do I feel like I always have to be right? Am I a know-it-all? If there's ever something brought up, is it kind of like pretty much like, I know the way to do it, this is how it needs to be done, I know. Do I dismiss or ignore the presence or opinions of those I feel threatened by or jealous of? This can be something as simple as, I've been with a big group of people sitting around talking, somebody comes up, you feel incredibly threatened by her, and you just basically just pretend like she's not even there. Or if she says something, you're like, what? Like, we don't say it, but you know what, you guys know what I mean? Like, you just like, you know, it could be the world's greatest idea ever, and you're going to be like, sorry. do I have an unwillingness to reflect on my own behaviors honestly and humbly when I'm confronted? Do I allow others' opinions of me to affect my mood? Do I sulk? Do I stay in funk? That is a huge, huge one for me. If I had to pick probably my number one top thing, it would be if somebody says something to me in a disapproving way, it can crush me. I can become, I mean, I feel, I want to say I've grown a lot in this, but I remember a point in time when it was like the entire day was ruined if someone looked at me the wrong way. But especially if someone said something like, I don't like that, or you did this wrong, or whatever, very much so, my entire mood, demeanor, sulking, feeling sorry for, and then I hear a lot of people nowadays say, like, oh, I'm just in a funk, and they're like, okay, like, what you are is you're in a mood that you're choosing not to get out of because of your deep sense of insecurity. Do I spend an excessive amount of time worrying about how I look or actually spend making myself look perfect? I'm not talking about being disciplined here. I'm not talking about taking care of yourself and normal, healthy manner. I'm talking about I can't go out in public because I don't look perfect, because I don't maybe have like a full face of makeup on, or my hair is out of place, or you know, those times when you go to your closet and you can't find anything that you think looks good or fits you the right way or whatever, so I'm not going to go at all. Or just like spending just an excessive amount of time working out, spending 3 hours on makeup. But I have heard that is something that can happen. And then on the other end of that, we can say those of us who don't do that, we're like, those girls are so insecure. They can't go anywhere without makeup on or whatever. But then on the other side is the, have I given up on even trying to look presentable? We're equally as insecure. We like to play it off like, I just don't care. But I wear sweatpants every single day or athletic shorts because I'm insecure. So it's comfortable for me, and it's just easier to act like, I don't care, whatever. And here's another one that's giant for me. If I fail at anything, do I beat myself up and just give up? That fear of failure. And I've been talked a lot about this stuff today, the passive aggressive class, which I'm kind of glad about because you did a good job. And then there's another part of me that was insecure and like, so over everything I have to say. But I think this is a huge one. Like, just not being able to take. And I say fail, and you can tell that I wrote that part because I say fail, when a lot of times people will be like, they didn't even consider that a failure. But to me, in my insecure mind, it's a failure. You know, it could just be that I didn't do it perfectly the first time. Or I'm afraid of not doing it perfectly, so I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to give up and then beat the tar out of myself about it. Do I take an excessive amount of selfies? Not just taking them, but then do I feel the need to post them for the purpose of receiving value based on how many compliments or likes I get? I mean, obviously, we all feel good when we post something and someone comments like, "Dang, girl, you look good." And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about getting a sense of self-worth, valuing who you are. Like, I have heard, and I have a teenage girl, she's not really us so much. But I've heard that for like a lot of teenage girls, they'll take down like pictures of like them and their friends if they don't get like a certain amount of compliments or likes or shared or whatever it is. I mean, you know, there's like 50 sources of social media now that I refuse to even try to keep up with. But you know what I mean? Like, I just have a phone call on my feed and like 5 days I had to hide her because I was like, I can't take anymore. Like, and it's very obvious to most of the people around her. That's the reason why that she constantly does that is for that sense of security and value that she gets. And then there's the last one, and this is one that I found myself a lot saying the older I get to either the girls in my small group, to other, you know, other teenage girls or whatever. Do I view myself as a daughter of God with a purpose given by Him to make a difference for the kingdom? And we're going to come back to that towards the end. So kind of look at that. Like I said, unless you're just like, you know, able to walk on water, you most likely are strong with that stuff. Because I just feel like almost everything that we tend to struggle with in some sense stems from a deep sense of insecurity within ourselves. This lie that we believe from Satan that God did not make us with a special purpose, that God didn't have a special hand in it, that, you know, that you, or I used to tell people, I'm like, I'm not saying God made a mistake, I'm saying He made it this way, and I royally screwed it up afterwards, and that was beyond repair. And so I think it's, you know, it's very, very important for us to look at that. But it's also, I feel like, nothing really changed in my life until I really started to look at how serious it is. It's also very easy for us to be like, I'm just really insecure. I just feel super insecure. I feel this, I feel that. But as we look today, we're going to look down through Saul's life. Like I said, I don't think we really make the changes we need to until we really heavily look at the consequences. And I know we've been talking about this a lot, even like in church on Sunday, and like you need to take the consequences and you need to tenfold them in everything that you do, because it's just really easy for us to just be, you know, to just blow things off. But because so many of the things that we do struggle with fit under some form of insecurity. And then you look at Saul's life, it's like, man, I really need to take seriously these dangers, the disaster that can come from something that we see as like, oh, that's just silly. I just have a little bit of jealousy. Just a little bit of, you know, why her or why this or poor me, you know, kind of attitude. And I came across this quote about Saul online. It said, "Saul's an intriguing character because he's such a chilling representation of the narcissistic underbelly, which many people have. One of the many trappings that emotionally broken people find themselves in is that of the danger and defiling of a root of insecurity and bitterness. Since many people were denied unconditional love, warmth, access, and acceptance from their parents, they have a tendency to become insecure. They use others to gain advantage, a sense of power and control, to dominate and use them, only to dispense with them later. They never gain permanent and healthy relationships with other people. It is sad, but at the same time, they are perpetuators of the very same cycles of abuse that was demonstrated to them." I think when I first read that, I was like, harsh much? Like, you know, yeah, you're right. I wasn't given this. I didn't have that unconditional love. The warmth maybe wasn't there growing up, you know? Acceptance, yeah, okay, cool. I can put that blame on mom and dad. I've come to that point in my life where I'm like, you're right, that's where it comes from. They made me insecure. So-and-so in fifth grade made me insecure, but she treated me this way. But then when you look at it, it talks about how, you know, those the trappings of, we are emotionally broken people. I would say overall, most people I talk to have some emotional brokenness about it. Even if you grew up in a really good home, there was somebody somewhere who emotionally damaged you. We've all went through middle school, so I know that's true. Like, I have a daughter who just came out of middle school, just came back from junior high camp, and I can literally sit there and just bawl my eyes out just hearing the stories of how rough middle school is. And so, you know, at some point in time, somebody came along, and they emotionally broke us. But then to take it to the next step and see that because of that sense of insecurity and not being dealt with properly, then we as in our human nature take and we try to manipulate that. And then we try to gain control. And then we want to feel valued. And we want to feel important and special. And we don't want to feel those nasty feelings that insecurity makes us feel. And then in return, we become the one perpetuating that cycle. Because in the sense of getting to a certain point, how many people would you say that you've damaged in your life due to your insecurity? And I know I look at myself, and even after hearing some of that stuff that shows some of shame, a lot of the shame that I carry around are the people that I have treated like crap in the moments of my deep insecurity. And like I said, we're going to look at Saul real quick and we're going to run through it, but Saul's whole life is an example of how his insecurity and his lack of faith in God led him down a path of insecurity, which led to pride, selfishness, the narcissism, and eventually his own demise. Because of his own refusal to deal with his insecurity in the godly way, these are just a few things we're going to look at. The first one, he became paranoid. You know, I know we say a lot, girls be crazy. Like, you know, girls are crazy. But a lot of that comes from that, like, paranoia that we have. We would never come right out and be like, I'm totally paranoid. But in reality, that's what's going on. When we're like, I feel like there's all these people inside my head. They're talking crazy. They're talking paranoid. Like, I'm totally embarrassed to say this because it sounds so egotistical. At my highest point of insecurity, I would literally walk into a room. Like, say I walked up here right now, and I would think to myself, every single person in this room is looking at me. Every single person in here is thinking bad things about me. Every single person in here is either noticing that I didn't recurl my hair, or that I cried off my makeup, or that I have big knees. I don't know. But it was just like every single person in there is judging me and thinking about me. I look back at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, didn't you think highly of yourself? And it was in the sense that I didn't think I did. In fact, I thought they think all bad things about me. I thought I'm the worst, I'm this, I'm that, and I think about all the ways I used to beat myself up. But in reality, like, there was a sense of, like, paranoia that everyone is focused on me. And I think sometimes the most freeing thing of going through some of the stuff is, like, being able to walk in a room and be like, maybe a couple of people have noticed me, but for the most part, nobody in here cares what the heck I look like. Nobody in here is thinking about this or that, and it's so freeing for me, you know? Where it could be the opposite way around, you know, where it's like, well, I walk into a room, nobody acknowledges that I'm there. Nobody cares, you know? And then we're that paranoia that the people who try really hard to love us and invest in us are like, thanks, what am I, chopped liver? Whatever, you know? It can become very damaging because to live your life inside your head like that is exhausting. And it doesn't make for someone that people want to be around. The second thing that did it caused him to abandon and turn on a trusted friend, David. Like, at first he just kind of abandoned that relationship here and there. Many times he just, you know, whatever, we're going to go into a little more, but ultimately, as I, like, read down through Saul, I was like, you're crazy. Like, you had somebody really, really awesome, and you just totally threw that away for nothing. And again, sad to say, I have totally been there. I have totally done that before, where I'm like, I had something that was good there, but because I got inside my own head, I let Satan inside my head, let's be real. I let Satan inside my head, and then I went crazy with it, and let him go crazy with it, and I never dealt with it. And I look back now, and I'm like, that could have been really good, and I really screwed it up. He became obsessed with taking out his competition. One of the
one of the things I think, I always tell people the coolest thing about being in a relationship with God and a part of a real church that, you know, because I didn't grow up going to church my whole life, and I'm not everything is like the real way God designed relationships, is knowing that the girls in my life aren't trying to take, don't see me as competition trying to take me out. You know, I say, like, it's awesome to know that I'm not worried about any of my friends talking bad about me, and I'm fine with that. And if they are, then they're going to come and tell me in about 5 seconds I'm going to hear about it to my face. And it's going to be for my own benefit. But you see Saul become obsessed with, I got to take the competition. You know, everybody, you know, good people became the competition. Eventually, like, everybody became the competition, and it was just a sad way to live. He eventually consulted a medium instead of trusting God. Some say, like, a witch or whatever, but I just look and I'm like, you know, that's scary. You had God, like, handpick you for something, and you're like, no, I'm going to go down this witchcraft path. Like, it's scary, but how many of us sometimes have looked at me like, how did I go from here to here? And it just came down to a simple, I just don't think God can take care of this. I know God says this, but I don't think so, so I'm going to choose this path instead. And that, again, can be a whole other umbrella of things that we choose to put our security in, whether it be sex, drugs, alcohol, food, excessive working out, whatever your thing might be that you cope with, that you look at, that you're like, I'm going to find the answers here. And God's like, well, I have them, but you're free to look there. You're never going to find it. He failed his people. Like God, like I said, God convicted him. He's the king of Israel. And he almost completely led them into an utter destruction. We'll talk a little bit more about how that was like a self-fulfilling prophecy that never had to happen. But and then at the end, and the thing I think, like I said, looking at the consequences that really stops me in my tracks to really think about is he ultimately lost his own life due to this like desire to like take out competition and to do this stuff. But not only that, but the lies of his son. When I was reading through this and I read about when Jonathan died, I don't know, it just really truly saddened me because a good guy died. And that is like a really, really good man. And it makes me think about even in my own kids' lives, like even if my kids grow up and they're the best version of them they can be, the most godly, they will still suffer consequences of me not dealing with the stuff I need to deal with. And that's something for me, that's a really big wake-up call. I know for some of you guys that you might not be thinking about that yet because you don't have children, but let me tell you, I sure as heck wish I would have started dealing with some of this crap before I even had kids. Because I'm glad to deal with it now. I see it a little bit more, especially like when I see it in my kids, and I'm like, oh, I see that, I need to work on that. But I really wish I would have started taking things a lot more seriously before I even had children. So we're going to do a really, really quick rundown through Saul's life. We're going to start, and it's in 1 Samuel, and like I said, you probably don't have time to turn or anything, but we're going to start in chapter 9, okay? So the children of Israel desperately want a king, like all the other nations do. God's like, what? I'm it. And they're like, no, we want a real king, we want a physical king. And he's like, fine, you get what you get. So he says, you can have what you want. So Saul's out looking for some lost donkeys, and God informs Samuel, that the prophet, Samuel the prophet, that Saul's man is going to be Israel's first king. And it's interesting to note that the chapter actually begins with a description of Saul's physical appearance. And it says in 1 Samuel 9:2, he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. There was not a more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than all the people. However, when Samuel explains to Saul that he's been chosen to be king over Israel, this is Saul's reply in 9:21. Saul answered, am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family not the least of all the tribes of Benjamin? Then why do you speak to me like this? So, right before that, he's like, he's tall, and he is good looking, you know, whatever. And then his response is, I'm from the small, you know, and then he uses the word small. Right after it tells us that he's like, head and shoulders above everyone else. And just to be perfectly honest with you guys, some of the most drop-dead gorgeous people I know are the most insecure people I know.
So you can sit here and be one of the prettiest girls in the whole wide world, and it will do absolutely nothing for you. I mean, I'm not kidding. There's this one girl I think of, and probably a lot of you know the same Kalani. One girl, and I mean, like, when she walks in, it's like breathtaking. And to sit there and talk to her, it's incredibly sad because she is so insecure and so terrified and always worried about things. But then on the other hand, I think sometimes we can sit back and be like, if I only looked like her, I would feel secure. I would feel like God really, you know, like really could use me or could do that. And you know, you see somebody here that it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, he's gorgeous. And yet he's like, he doesn't trust when someone comes to him and says, God handpicked you. You're going to be king. He's like, oh, but I'm from something small. And then it goes on to say, then Samuel gets ready to hold a ceremony to introduce Saul to the nation as their king, and Saul's nowhere to be found. In 1 Samuel 10:21, it says, and Saul was chosen, but when they sought him, he could not be found. Therefore, they inquired of the Lord further, has the man come here yet? And the Lord answered, there he is, hidden among the equipment. You know, another, you know, kind of sign of, like, you know, like I said, you look down through here and you're like, textbook insecurity. You know, he's just, he's giving up. He's just like, I can't do this, so I won't even try. You know, and again, you're handpicked from God. You have a prophet there. They're holding this thing, and he's off hiding. You know, but I look at my own life, and I have allowed that horrible, evil giant of insecurity to paralyze me to the point where there may be things that I may even know I can do, but I just refuse to do them. And I would just rather hide, and I would just rather stay to myself or whatever else, because I just don't have the trust and the faith that God can do what God says he can. Okay, so right here, at the very beginning right here, it's just like these little signs, right? It's just like the little stuff. It's like, oh, you know, who am I? Oh, poor me. I'm just going to be whatever. But it doesn't take long for just these little problems to really snowball into some really serious problems, because he doesn't handle them. When he finally becomes king and he steps into the role of leader of the nation of Israel, he begins to make some tragic mistakes that are rooted in the deep insecurities that we just get like a little tiny peek of at first, and how he chooses to placate them. So then we're going to jump down to chapter 13. Saul's in battle, and he's waiting for Samuel to show up to make a sacrifice, give him the guidance from the Lord concerning the battle. Okay, so he's there, he's not ready to fight. Samuel is supposed to come, supposed to offer a sacrifice, he's going to tell him what to do, and pretty much he knows this man gets to do it. I do not. It is not my job. However, Saul starts to get real fearful. And so he just says, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to do this myself. Even though he knows that it's not the way it works. So then Samuel comes to him in 1 Samuel 13:11 and says, Saul says, when I saw that the people were scattering from me and that you did not come with the days appointed, and the Philistines were starting to gather, so he starts to, you know, try to talk his way out of this. And the part that just really got to me the most is when he's, you know, like, first I started to get scared. I saw that people were starting to be unhappy with me, you know, plays into that need for people to like me. I was afraid that people weren't going to like me. I was afraid that maybe if I did this way, then, you know, the people would be behind me, and they would be loyal to me, and they would do this and that. But then he turns and he was like, but it's your fault. If you would have done this when you were supposed to, then I would not have felt this way, and I would not have made the decisions that I made, and then I wouldn't have gotten scared. You know, and unfortunately here, instead of Saul's, you know, focus being doing what God says and knowing that God's the one that's in control there and that this is God's battle, instead he turned his greatest fear was that he looked bad in the eyes of his people and his enemies that were watching him. And so therefore he displays no confidence in God concerning the matter. In his fear of failure and the need for public approval, he's afraid of being humiliated, so he's like, I'm just going to take matters into my own hands. And then that's when his insecurity leads into pride. And that's what, you know, if you ever look at insecurity. It's like, it's not a standalone thing. It's always, always connected with a sense of pride, a sense of selfishness, you know? And so Samuel comes to him, and Saul's pride just like totally leaps into action. He's gonna cover up the real issue here. He's like, okay, we're really fast. Let's not talk about how scared it was. Let's not talk about how it was like really afraid that people were gonna think I couldn't handle this. But instead, he decides to become the victim. It's your fault. You didn't do what you were supposed to do when you were supposed to do it. And if you would have, then I wouldn't have been this poor me. For me, you know? And how many of us have been in that situation when it comes to our insecurity? Like, we totally make ourselves the victim. It's very, very, very easy to be a victim. And the sad thing about that is that most people are completely pushed away from people from the victim mentality. I know I am, and there's someone who's constantly like, nothing's up to my fault, poor me. They don't take responsibility for their own actions. Like, if you would have done this sooner, then I wouldn't be this way. To be honest with you, I go up and I'm like, I don't know how much of a relationship I can have with that person, because I think have that kind of pressure on me that I have to constantly make them happy all the time, or that if I don't do A, B, C, and D perfectly right, then their whole world's gonna fall apart, or they're gonna do something stupid, or they're gonna sin and then blame it on me. And that's a really dangerous place for us to live, because it does not cultivate healthy relationships. And so therefore, in our desire to be liked by people and to be valued by people, like I said, it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy that we're like, okay, well, I'll do this to cover up my own insecurity. In return, it pushes people away. And I think that's what's really truly sad sometimes about the way Satan works in our lives, and how some of the most insecure people who are constantly worried about people not liking them. I feel like I have this conversation like once a week. It's weird because I've been having it with guys a lot lately. I'm like, so let me get this straight. You did something stupid, and you thought that I didn't like you because I didn't approve of it. So you ignored me and avoided me and were really crappy and rude to me for 3 weeks. So then I was finally kind of like, okay, whatever. And so then our relationship started to suffer. And so then you ended up being right in the end, even though the whole time I had no problem with you. But now we have crap we gotta do. Now we gotta sit here, we gotta talk through this, and blah, 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 blah. When in reality, yeah, I was disappointed in this or that, but I was fine. I knew you could get back up and do what you needed to do. You're the one who lived in here for 3 weeks making this traumatic relationship problem that never needed to even be there. And I'm totally that I can say that with full confidence when I talk to them, because I've been there and I have done that. And the sad thing is about the pride that comes up through that is the pride through our insecurity will convince us that it's in our best interest to make ourselves the victim through blame when confronted with our own moral failures. And then that deception of pride will then convince us that our selfish motives are actually for God's benefit. And you know that, I know that I've done that. I know I've sat there and been like, well, but I feel like I'm trying to really do what's best and this and that. And it's just funny how manipulative and warped we can become in our own heads. And so just being like, you know what? Yep, messed that up, screwed that up. That was my bad. I'm really sorry. Let's work through this. Not your fault. You didn't make me feel this way. You didn't make me do those stupid things. That was in my own head. And I'm going to try really, really hard to make this right. And I can honestly say about 90% of the time that conversation happens, there's no problem. Obviously, there's always stuff. Go along with that. But this is where kind of that, you know, those attitudes of that we talked about through some of those things is like, you know, I just look at people sometimes and I'm like, you were just sitting there and you're just sulking and you're staying in this funk forever. And the rest of us are like, I like to use the analogy of a horse a lot. I don't know why, because I've never even run one. But it's like, you fell off your horse and you're sitting down there and you're like, oh, for me, I fell off my horse. And then you're sitting down there like, well, this would have happened differently. And then you're like,
all those people up there hate me because I fell off my horse and like you're sitting there laying in the mud or whatever. And then I'm like, we're actually on our horses over there. We're like, get back up on your horse and catch up. You fell off your horse. I'm going to fall off my horse in a mile. That's been going to fall off my horse a lot. They're very clumsy. Get back up on your horse and catch up. We're sick and tired of waiting for you to figure it all out and sit there and be like, wow, but it's just such a bad, it's just never going to accomplish anything because I just fell off my horse. And I'm like, no, what I want to do is I want to come back there and I want to slam my head in it, but there's nothing I can do for you. Because you have to make that decision that, you know what, yep, I did it. I fell off my horse. I was either doing something stupid. I was trying to ride backwards. I thought I could do tricks I couldn't do. Or I was an idiot and I just fell off. I hit a bump in the road. I don't know what it is, but, you know, like I said, one of the guys I talked to recently was like, you're so talented. I have faith in you. We all have, everybody up there on the horses believes in you. You're the one sitting back here going, nobody wants me on a horse up there with them. And we're like, no, we just want you to get on it and go. And he's like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah. It's actually way more emotionally exhausting for us to sit here and watch you sulk and stay in bumps than it ever was to even be mad at you for it. Like, we're all over it. You get over it. But unfortunately, when we are caught up in our own rot of insecurity, where it's just that's all we see, and we're not properly dealing with it, and we're not properly letting the people say things in our lives and confronting it, then that's where we stay. And Samuel comes to Saul, and his response, it uncovers the deep insecurity lying underneath your things. He says, Samuel said, when you were not little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners and fight against them until they are consumed. Then why did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And this is the point in time whenever he was told, go in there, take them out, I've given it to you. This is your victory. I love the dirt. And he's like, just go do it. You're going. And I know he says that to us too, but for me, I'm like, yeah, there he is. There he is. Why didn't they even bother? Why didn't they do exactly what he says? I don't know why I don't either. But in Saul, he goes in there and he keeps the spoils. And then God's like, destroy it all. And then actually Samuel comes in, I cut this part out, but he's like, what is this bleeding of sheep I hear? He's almost like, you know, he's got a little serpent tongue to him. That's funny. I'm not supposed to hear about it. And I do. What's your problem? And, you know, he says, he goes to the root of the problem, like, because you're little in your own eyes, it shows up that you don't trust God, and you trust in God's abilities, and he's the one who's actually empowered you to do these things. So Saul's pride can't cover it anymore, and he finally admits the real reason for his disobedience, which that's what it is, and that's what one of the things I've been trying to do a lot lately is, like, I'm like, no, I'm going to call it what it is. Okay? Like, when I was talking to somebody last week, and I was like, I was afraid. No, I'm going to call it what it is. I was deeply insecure that people didn't like me. Or, well, and then I was, like, really struggling. No, I sinned, and I was disobedient. Like, you know, I really have to call things for what they are. In chapter 15, verse 24, Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the command of the Lord in words, because I feared the people and I obeyed their voice. Again, it goes back to Saul feared people more than he feared God. He was so worried about what the people thought, and I was scared of what they wanted me to do, and I was afraid that I would look bad in front of other people. And the funny thing is that it always, I mean, it's funny, but it's actually truly tragic, is that everything that Saul feared that he wanted so badly, it ended up the opposite way around. And yet the people who were like, I'm going to do what God says, I know all the lessons that we've heard about David and everybody else, those were the people that gained the loyalty. Those were the people that gained the favor of the people, where the people are like, you know what, I'm not going to do things that I know are wrong, or that I'm not going to succumb to this idea of I've got to make everybody happy all the time, or, you know, or whatever. He was just way too consumed with that, and it
ended up being something that ruined him. You come down to verse 18, and this is right after the infamous David and Goliath encounter. David returned from killing the Philistines. The woman came out of the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, playing songs of joy. The women sang as they played and said, "Saul has killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Then Saul became very angry. This saying did not please him, and he said, "They have given David honor for 10,000s, but for me only 1,000. Now what more can he have but to be king?" And Saul was jealous and did not trust David from that day on. So he didn't trust someone who had just did something amazing for him because somebody else said good things about him. Sounds crazy, but I've totally been there. You know, when I was a kid growing up, I used to always think that the song was, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his tens of thousands, like they were doing a comparison, like, Saul killed this, but David did this. And then I read it, and I was like, oh, they were like, Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his tens of thousands. It was Saul who made it the competition in his head. You know, it wasn't, it's like, you know, I'm sure you've been there, and someone's like, "You're really good at blah, 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 blah. And you're really good at blah, blah, blah." And the person over here is like, "Oh, so I'm not good at that." Okay. You know, I have had somebody come recently go up to me and say that. Like, "Remember when you said that I was really good at this and they were really good at that? Well, I was really pissed that you said that they were good at that and I was only good at the other thing." I'm like, okay, that's what you took from that conversation. But that's just Satan. He's whispering in our ear, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that she said something really good about that girl? Did you hear that this person's getting recognition for something?" And we play that comparison game, and it all feeds into this bitter, ugly insecurity that causes him to be jealous and to not trust someone who had no reason to lose that trust and to lose that relationship. So his next move after that is to take a spear and attack him. That escalated quickly. So verse 12 says, Saul was afraid of David. Again, it's brought up over and over again. Fear, fear, fear. When I'm insecure, when I'm not dealing with myself, then I constantly live in a state of fear. And it's just like a horrible place to live. Like, who wants to live someplace where you're constantly afraid? I mean, there are real legitimate things to be afraid of. But he's afraid of what? That people like him more? That people are going to be like, "Well, he's really, really good. He should have your job." Which should happen. Like, you made that happen from your own stuff. But he says, Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but he had left Saul. You know, and it's just really, truly sad that, you know, that's where it leads to. "I don't like you." People, I mean, first of all, you do something really awesome. Awesome. Thanks for taking on Goliath. We appreciate that. But people are saying really good things about you. Now I don't trust you. Now I am deeply afraid of you. Now I'm going to try to attack you. And then what's the next step is now God's with David and God's not with him. And it's a very quick progression. And I think it's something that I need to be very aware of and that we all need to be very, very aware of, is that it can go boom, boom, boom really quickly. Relationships can go south really quickly. I have seen people give up on their relationship with God due to made-up scenarios in their head from insecurity. "I'm never, ever, ever going to find anyone ever if I don't do this right now. I got to go be with that guy right now because I'm like 21 years old and my biological clock is ticking. God's not promised me what he said he was and blah, 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 blah." And then you like turn around and you're like, "Man," and then like I seriously had this happen. And then a guy comes to me like, "What happened to that? I totally thought she was adorable. I wanted to ask her out." And I was like, "Well, totally could have had that awesome guy right there." But because we let ourselves get that fear and that impulse, and then it just becomes this insatiable thirst that, you know, that we can't stop. And unfortunately, you know, God eventually leaves him. And then it goes to what I find to be the really, really sad stuff. He finds out that his daughter is in love with David, so he decides to use her to try to get to her. He says, "I will give her to David. I will use her to trap him, and the Philistines will go against him." So I know Carrie pointed out that one part that I read about how he decided that his dowry was going to be 200 foreskins of Philistines. The reason why he said that was hoping that David would really want to do it and go try to take 200 Philistine foreskins, and it would be like, heck no, and kill him. And he comes back with them and it's like, I did it. And then Saul's even more like, I really, really hate you. He says, and he eventually becomes even more of a horrible, bitter mess of a man. When Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that his daughter loved him, Saul was even more afraid of David, and he hated him always. Like, so David's like, dude, I did everything you asked me to do. Like, everything. I'm doing blah, 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 blah. The man has, like, attacked him. He's just sent him out and tried to get him killed. He's made him go out on, you know, these crazy things in order to win the love. And he's like, well, even my own daughter loves him. And he went and did this. Now I just hate him. And then that hate never leaves. Eventually, we have to stop there because we could, I'm not kidding. I was surprised at how much I would really encourage you guys to go through read. We could be here all day talking about all the instances of insecurity in Saul's life and how it just led to horrible things. But to kind of go on without going any more into it is that Saul eventually, like, went on this wild goose chase of hunting him down and pretty much creating war and stuff to take David out, and to the point where eventually he's so mortally wounded with arrows that he asks his sword bearer to put him out of his misery, and he's like, no, man. So he falls on his own sword. And then I thought he died there, but then Carrie tells me that if you read forward, that he lays there on his sword and he doesn't die. He just lays there bleeding out, he's miserable, and he has to wait for one of the enemies to come by and ask him to finally just cut up to end it for him. And I just think to my, and then it goes on to talk about like all of his sons being killed too in that battle. And what a tragic way to end, you know? And you just look and you, like, if you could rewind and go all the way back, just starting off with like, oh, who am I? Nobody special. Poor me. To, oh, I don't like that they have that, and I don't. And, you know, this and that. And it's just, it's truly sad to see that. But when I choose to live my life out of insecurity, I'm choosing that same exact path as Saul and those same consequences. And that's what's really important for me and for you to really take note of. This isn't just some, like, oh, that's just some exception to the rule. Like I said, I've seen it happen in girls over and over and over again. There's a few truths that we just really need to focus on in order to get to be able to get out of some of this mess. And the first one is that insecurity is simply a focus on self. It's me, 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 me. Constantly focus on myself. Like I said, I thought Ben did a really good job in the class that he did of talking about how, like, when you're constantly thinking about yourself, like, you know, that it just causes you to be a mess. And it just, one of the things that I know we tend to do a lot is when people are like, I'm just being really insecure, is be like, okay, now replace that with, I'm just being really selfish. And tell me how you feel about that statement. You know, if you can look at it and be like, well, I'm just really insecure with her. Well, change it with, I'm just really selfish with her. And then see, you know, how, when you kind of see that reflection in the mirror of that, then it kind of brings new things to life. Selfishness turns into a narcissism. And narcissism is an excessive interest in or admiration of oneself. It could be one's physical appearance, extreme selfishness, a grandiose view of our talents, and an intense craving for admiration. It's what starts off as like, oh, I'm just this, becomes an obsession over ourselves. You know, it's just this thing where people just look, and like I said, no one wants to be close to a narcissist. No one. No one wants to be around someone who is constantly all about them all the time. And they're never happy. And then, like I said, it's that self-fulfilling prophecy. Just like with Saul in the beginning, it's like, oh, people are giving David, what's going to stop him taking my kingdom? Nothing. Because of the way you act. It's not because other people said nice things about him. It's not because he had this, you know, it's because you acted that way. It's because you were an insecure, jealous, bitter mess. And so, therefore, everything we're so afraid of losing, that we're holding on to so tightly, or we think we are with our insecurity, at the the end of the day is all gone due to them. So, really quickly, I have four things that Saul could have avoided in his life if he had focused on these things that he came to. And say first point is Ben's being selfless. I have truly found that when I walk into a room, instead of thinking, I bet everybody here is thinking about me, blah, 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 blah. And instead I walk into a room, and I have to do this like every single time I walk into a room, is say like, is there somebody in this room who's maybe really insecure, maybe having a really hard time fitting in? Is there this or that? Or, I'm really excited to see so-and-so. So when I walk into a room, I'm like, I can't wait to go find so-and-so and tell them like, I really miss them, I really love them. It can be something as simple as just being like, I'm gonna stop thinking about me for 5 seconds. Obviously, being under a selfless, serving, caring about people. One thing that's huge, huge, huge for me was praying specifically for people that I was jealous of. Not just praying for them, because a lot of times it's like, God, please help me not to kill this person. But for me, it was, I remember being 18 years old and having to pray specifically that really good things would happen to someone that I was incredibly jealous of. And that was hard, but I can tell you that that helped me more than anything else. To see someone and be like, man, she gets everything. And then to go home at night and pray that God would bless her more. I just really can't humble myself. The second thing we can do is putting God's purpose before our own needs. If you look through Saul, every time something bad happened, it's because he was worried about himself and his own needs and his own, his own status with the people. However, almost every time that Samuel goes to confront him about this, he's like, God gave this to you. God appointed you. God put you, I think even one point it says, God put you on this specific mission. Saul, what are you doing? And I think too often for us, like, we are so focused in on like my needs being met, my expectations are being met, instead of saying that whatever God's purpose is. Some of the least insecure people I know are the most kingdom-minded people. They're constantly like, if I go here, who am I going to reach out to? What am I going to do? Who needs help? So-and-so needs this. I want to be there for them. They're not constantly thinking about like, well, I came here and nobody said hi to me. But they're like, I want to walk in this room and I want to find someone sitting alone. And that's something I deeply struggle with. But, those are the people that I look at and I'm like, man, she's really never insecure. She's rarely ever sitting in a corner crying or pouting or feeling that sorry for herself. Or being an arrogant mess if you're that. like I said, it shows in different ways. The third thing is humbly admitting the struggle and refusing to stay there. That's why I really think it would be good for you guys to all take one of these and go find someone, and I'm not kidding when I say this, go find the person who will be the most straightforward. And even tell them, if I find out that you lied to me on this, or you tried to smear my feelings, we're going to have an issue. Because you don't want to stay there. And that's the hardest thing about insecurity, is that insecurity, pride, covering, they all go there. So in order to kind of get rid of this insecurity, we really have to make sure that we're like, okay, I got to say it's here, I got to call it what it is, and I need to get help. And also finding people who... For me, one of the biggest things is finding people who are the opposite of me and learning from them how to do things. I really struggle with insecurity, body insecurity. And I can tell you this, there's a few people I know that if I spend a lot of time around them, it's going to be really bad because they're deeply insecure about bodies and they're obsessive over it and talk about it all the time. But I also know there's a few people I can go hang around with that are not going to let me be, obviously, like just a self, a slob that stuffs my face all the time, but they are gonna be like, thick is good, girl. It's all right. It's been really helpful for me to put myself around other people who have a different viewpoint than me. And then the fourth thing, and it's the thing we said over and over and over again, and it goes along with this last point right here the last question I asked about being insecure. That I trust God, I know He's in control, and I know that He has my best interest at heart. I think that's the biggest thing, guys. We would be 10 times less insecure if we could sit back and just be like, hey, remember who you are. Remember whose you are. Remember that God made you, and He gave you things, and yeah, they're not so-and-so's talents, and they're not, and you may not do this as well as so-and-so, but God made you exactly the way He wanted you to. He put you in this specific place at this specific time because He wanted you
to be able to use your gifts and talents and weaknesses and struggles and sin for his purpose and his glory. And at the end of the day, do I ask myself, before I maybe go do something that's destructive to gain security, be like, am I realizing that I'm a child of God, that I'm God's daughter, and that I have a purpose, and that things don't have to be the ugly way that, you know, that I feel like they may have been in the past. If you'll get one of those, like on your way out or whatever, and you'll have someone fill those out, and then I would just really encourage you to go find someone and just be really open and honest about maybe the things you are that you struggle with. Maybe if there are self, you know, destructive ways that you find yourself trying to find security, that you know, like had Shelly talked about before, there are specific ministries or classes or different people maybe who've been through those, you know, like, just be honest with yourself. Like, I overeat because I'm deeply insecure about this, and I find a lot of happiness in food for 5 seconds, you know, or whatever it might be. And just really try to make sure that you're not staying in that place, because it's a really easy place once we've been a victim for a really long time, and I know that personally. But I can say, although I am not the most secure person I know, I can honestly say that in the last 10 years, God has really, really helped me grow in this tremendously. To the point now, like I said, things that I thought about or the way I viewed myself 10 years ago, I laugh at them because they are humorous to me that that was ever done. So I'm going to pray a little bit. Dear Heavenly Father, I just want to, again, thank you for letting us come together. Really speak sometimes to talk about insecurity and talk about how always I'm insecure and how I didn't like admitting that I'm so weak and that I struggle so much and that I don't trust you, God. And I just want to apologize for that. God, you've given me so much, you've blessed me so much, you've proven yourself over and over and over again, God, and I know it's a giant slap in the face when I say that I don't trust you or I don't believe you, God. I just pray for every girl here that they can recognize and understand that they are your perfect daughter and made exactly the way that you wanted her to be, God, and find the security and the fulfillment and not go down the self-destructive, self-fulfilling prophecy throughout this all, God, and instead.